Members of Congress are calling for tighter regulations of government labs handling dangerous microbes. The call comes after employees at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention mishandled materials containing flu and anthrax samples. Sean Kaufman is former CDC scientist, now president of Behavioral-Based Improvement Solutions. He recently testified to Congress about the safety violations at the CDC, and he joins us now. Sean, good morning.
Well, good morning to you.
So, first of all, based on your experience at CDC and what you have read and seen of the problems reported, does this seem like a systemic thing, or is this just a string of anecdotes?
No, I think that there are some very, very serious issues that do have to be looked at, and I think that there are some safety issues that are systemic, not only, as I would say, throughout CDC, but I could say throughout the profession of research science.
It sounds like, yeah, there were things found at the FDA that should have been stored at CDC and so forth. So give us an idea of the extent of the dangerous items that are at CDC on any given day.
Well, I think that, you know, there's a couple of ways that we need to look at this. When I say that there are some serious issues that need to be looked at through research science, I'm saying this as a statement of we can always do things better. I'm not saying that the general public is at a risk. We do have things that we work with in laboratory environments that are dangerous. There's no doubt. And the reason why we work with them is because people in natural environments come in contact with dangerous things every day. You know, tuberculosis, influenza, anthrax is even something that is a natural causing disease. So we have scientists who work with very, very dangerous things in very, very safe ways. And so the discoveries that have been made are surprising, but in a way that they're really it's not that big of a surprise. You have a scientist back in the 1950s who potentially has passed away. And as a result of passing away, their work was stored and not logged back in the 1950s. And though it's not an excuse, because we definitely need to do inventory control, those things should have been discovered a long time ago. But again, it's one of those things where if the owner of a particular product is no longer around, it becomes very hard to speak for something that occurred so long ago. And so it's not an excuse. There definitely needs to be better inventory control. But I do not believe with all my heart that anyone in the general public was at risk.
Well, let's talk about inside CDC, a couple of angles I want to ask you about. Tom Frieden, during his testimony the other day, made an interesting statement that scientists who handle these types of materials on a regular basis can become desensitized to how dangerous they are. What's your comment on that?
I think that's a great idea. As a behaviorist, and that's something I specialize in, I think that that's a first step look, and I agree with him. I think that when you have somebody who is working with something day in and day out, the respect for that risk is sometimes it wanes and it decreases. However, there is a counter to that. When someone also works with a particular risk, they understand it more. They become more specialized in it. They become better at it. And so there's two ways. There are complacency issues that we have to look at, but we also have to give credit to the scientists who are the experts. And I think that this issue, the way it started, really starts from a misunderstanding between what the general public sees as acceptable in science and what scientists see as an acceptable range of behavior surrounding the agent they're working with.
Now, the CDC staff had waited a while to alert the director that these safety violations had occurred. Do you think that communications vertically within CDC are adequate? Do people feel intimidated saying, hey, maybe this isn't such a great procedure the way we're handling these things?
The anthrax incident is the incident where where CDC was notified 10 minutes after they found it. So that's great, but I will tell you, you're on to something here. This is one of the biggest issues. The fact that the CDC director did not know that this issue had happened for such a long period of time with a very serious agent, that demonstrates that there is some serious breakdowns in communication within the organization.
And so you work there. What do you think they need to do next for the communications issue?
Well, Look, I've been very impressed with the way CDC has handled the anthrax incident, and I'm saying anthrax incident because they've been very transparent and they've communicated with the general public and they took care of their workforce. And the fact that, you know, the director has come forward and said, look, we've got these communication lapses. I think that there's a lot that has to be done, but I think it begins with assessing and trying to determine what went wrong in the first place. And I do believe that the director is looking at those issues, and as soon as those issues are discovered or he identifies those issues, I think we can start beginning to look at solutions for solving the problem.
Maybe I'm being naive here, but I would think that among a group of people that are academics and scientists, there would be a little bit more open culture just because they would tend to look at the facts and try to fix them rather than try to hide things because somebody could get in trouble.
I agree with you, but there's another, and it's not, again, I was accused in testimony of, you know, making excuses, and I don't want to make excuses. I'm trying to communicate a perspective. Scientists are very matter of fact. You know, A plus B equals C. And scientists do not come to work to put themselves or other people at risk. That's not something they do intentionally. And so if a scientist doesn't perceive a enormous risk to the general public or enormous risk as a result of the work that they're doing either to themselves or someone else, and that's not a disrespect to the agent, that means they've assessed the situation and they've come to the conclusion that based on what the situation is, there really is a minimal risk, then they sometimes will act as it's perceived in the general public to be very nonchalant, when in reality, the scientist is literally the expert on the agent. They know how long it takes to kill it. They know how it's transmitted. They know how it's spread. And so it's not making excuses for the scientist, but it's trying to communicate that, listen, these scientists know what they're doing. They are trained experts, and we have to respect them and ask them why, not bring up, you know, accusations, but say, well, why did this happen, and actually listen to their answers.
We're speaking with Sean Kaufman. He's president of Behavioral-Based Improvement Solutions, and I want to ask about that in a moment. But my third question had to do with training. How much training do people at CDC get in the handling and understanding of these materials, such as microbes, and how often is that repeated or refreshed for the people working there?
I think that's a great question. I think the scientists that are doing this work are well prepared, and I can't stand talking in past tense because professional development is something that needs to frequently happen. The scientist and the reason why the accident with the anthrax incident occurred was there was really not enough on-the-job training, meaning scientists are given a large number of standard operating procedures to follow, and sometimes those SOPs are not validated, they're not verified, and a scientist is not, in essence, evaluated to make sure that they can follow that SOP as the author of the SOP intended. So there has to be some more training for on-the-job and SOP verification principles.
Now, some members of Congress are calling for some kind of an independent body to oversee and regulate the handling of dangerous materials by the federal laboratories. What's your thought on that idea?
I think it's a great idea to definitely explore. And in fact, I've always thought that the Select Agent Program should report directly to the Secretary of Health and Human Services. I've always thought that would be a great idea. Why they fall within CDC and USDA, I'm unsure about that. I think if you elevate it up, have them directly report to the Secretary of Health and Human Services, you would give the opportunity to adequately evaluate the programs, not only within HHS, but outside of HHS as well.
I mean, HHS has been, let's say, occupied with a lot of other matters in the last couple of years, particularly goings on at CMS and at the healthcare.gov and so forth. Do you wonder whether HHS headquarters is sufficiently overseeing CDC as one of the many of, in its panoply of sub-agencies and components?
You know, let me tell you what I do know, because there's a lot that I don't, but let me tell you what I do know. I know that the high containment laboratories, BSL-3 and BSL-4, are much safer today as a result of the Select Agent Program than they ever were before. And so we have made enormous strides with the Select Agent Program. It has done in my opinion, what it needs to do. But there is a conflict of interest. Asking federal governments or asking agencies to investigate themselves and to monitor themselves is a direct conflict of interest, which does need to be solved.
And let me just ask you briefly about behavioral-based improvement solutions. What do you do?
It's a great question. We are a company that focuses on safety and bringing behavioral-based solutions to safety, meaning we believe that you can write as many plans as you want to write and you can look at as many outcomes as you want, but it's really about behavior that connects the plans to the outcomes. So we focus on high-containment laboratory environments and have done so for many years.
All right. So any final advice for where CDC should go next?
I hope CDC not only spends a lot of time taking a look at what happened and modifying their culture, but I also think this is an indicator that we need to educate the general public about science a little bit more as well. There's a difference between what Hollywood puts on a movie screen and what really truly happens in a high containment laboratory. And I would invite anyone who's ever interested in understanding what's going on in a high containment facility, reach out and give me a call, contact me. I'd be very, very happy to describe all of those issues.
And just briefly, the news reports have described these materials as being in vials. Are they glass vials? And what happens if one of them drops and spills on the floor? Does that mean everybody gets sick, or do you still have to touch it?
That's a great, it's a wonderful question. That Ziploc bag that was shown in the hearing, that Ziploc bag is exactly what you're talking about. If a vial does fall on the ground, first and foremost, we hope it's not glass. If it's glass, that's a problem. But if the vial does fall on the ground, it has to be stepped on, kicked. It has to be, something has to cause it to break open, which is very tough. I mean, I could take a pair of boots and try and open a vial. But if we put it in a Ziploc bag, when we transport it only 5 feet within a laboratory, going from a cabinet to an incubator, when it falls on the ground, that Ziploc bag makes sure that even if the vial did break, that it's still contained within a little bag. And that, that's one of those examples that, looks great on Hollywood. It looks great on, when the chairman's holding it up and saying, look, Ziploc bags. But until you understand exactly what it's used for in the laboratory, you really don't know what's happening.
All right. Sean Kaufman is a former CDC scientist and now the president of Behavioral-Based Improvement Solutions. Thanks so much for joining us.
You are so welcome. Thank you.